Awesome. Last week was absolutely awesome. This week, I believe, is going to be awesome, too, because what you're going to find out is when we go through this, you're going to find out that you're thinking people are having problems. They may be having some kind of mental problem or mental issue, and this is just going to show you that somebody could actually be grieving, and they don't know it, and you don't know it, and they're having issues, and if they could just go back to where they were grieving, like I told it, the senior saints at the Bible study, the senior saints, sometimes I see people that are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and they don't even realize that they're grieving a loss that occurred when they were 5, 10, 15, 20, and they never grieved the loss. And so now they're 10, 20, 30 years down the road, and they're still hurting, and they're having a hard time getting along with people, and having a hard time handling certain things. And I know it's painful, but if they can go back to where that was and dig it up and then deal with it, then it frees you up here. So it's crazy, but that's how it works. So here it is. Grief recovery, living at peace with loss. We don't have many more to go, but I'm just trying to put some stuff in your hands because I want you to be able to help people. And from what I've heard, a lot of stuff that's been given out has helped a lot of people, or at least give you ammunition when you find yourself in these kind of situations with people. This one right here is going to help. Last week was awesome. Sunday morning, if you weren't here Sunday morning, you get a chance to hear it, please go on YouTube. And it's called Beautiful Brokenness. And the Japanese have a technique called kintsugi. Kintsugi is where they take a broken vessel and they put it together with gold. And I've got two of them out there. It's not really kintsugi. It's actually bottles can you go get me one of the bottles, brothers? Right by there in the back on the thing. It's actually just a bottle with glue on it. I mean, because like I told them, if anybody thinks this is what I'm getting ready to show you is what it's worth, y'all might want to come up here and try to get it, but it's not. It's just something homemade, but the Japanese invented this. You break something, you put it back together with gold. So what it say is, it's called golden glue or golden cutlery. But you can take this right here. What it does is, they say it's not good as new, because we always talk about good. Thank you, brother. We always talk about good as new. Okay? What happens is, like this thing right here is worth $1. But if it breaks and they do kintsugi, whoever is broken is put together with gold. Now this $1 vessel is worth $100. So it's not good as new, it's better. Don't bring it up here, brother. If I got another bite there, it was $2. But it's a lot bigger and got more on it, so it could go for as much as $500. It's only a $2 bottle for $500, because what you've done is you've gone in the cracks and you've put gold in the cracks. My grandmama had one of these plates. I saw it when I was little. If I'd have known, it might have been just a replica. I don't know. If I'd have known it back then, I'd have said, Grandma, can I have that thing? You know, I don't know where it went to. But again, it means you glue it back with gold, and it increases the value. You can multiply the value unlimited depending on the person who wants to buy it. So again, we all have breaks and cracks in our lives. And if we let God do his work and let the Holy Spirit do his work, then God puts it back with gold. It's his spirit. When he fixes something, he doesn't just fix a break. He doesn't, when you're broken, your heart's broken, you're grieving, he doesn't just fix it and make it as good as new. He makes it better than new, because you get to be able to help somebody else, and you become very valuable in his kingdom. So, they sure do. they can do it. They can put a hurting on you. Amen. Yep. I tell you what, I had a jaw tooth. I had to get a cap on it. And Dr. McCoy, last thing Dr. McCoy did for me before he got sick. And I said, well, Doc, what kind of cap can I go back to with? He said, well, you can go with a cap that's white and it's got ceramic on it. Or so you can go with the golden. And I said, no. He said, you can go with the stainless steel one. He said, you better crack walnuts. And so I went with the stainless steel one since it was so far back. If it had been up here and I got a silver one, Linda would have sent me back. And so So he put it on there, and he's right. I can crack nuts with that. The only problem is the top one doesn't have one. So I'm still kind of. Have you ever wondered how the bionic man, the 60-year-old man, although he's got this arm and these legs, how he can pick up airplanes and pick up all this stuff with just that one arm and them legs? I mean, what about his back and all this other stuff? You know what I'm saying? But of course, it is fiction. Right. But this here, this is not fiction. This is nonfiction. All right? There we go. Of course, this gets smaller and smaller, but I still have to put it up here for two reasons. One, to keep you in line with everything, but also in case somebody comes there that hadn't had any of this. Who's not questioned the reason for pain and suffering in the world? Some people have become hardened by their losses. Others soften. God knows what you need. Some people need to be hardened. Some people need to be softened. And so God knows that. So God used their grief to cultivate them in a tender understanding. Cultivate them tender understanding hearts. Just know that Jesus understands. Man of sorrow, acquainted with grief. Isaiah 53:3. And we read that Sunday too, which is very powerful. And as a matter of fact, let me pull that up and read that to you in another version. It is so, so powerful. It just when I read this, it just blew me away. Here it goes. Who believed Isaiah 53? Who believes what we have heard and seen? Who would have thought God's saving power would look like this? The servant grew up before God, a scrawny seedling, a scrubby plant in a parched field. There was nothing attractive about him, nothing that caused us to take a second look. He was looked down on and passed over, a man who suffered, who knew pain firsthand. One look at him and people turned away. We looked down on him, thought he was scum. Come out the cross now. But the fact is, it was our pains he carried, our disfigurements, all the things wrong with us. We thought he brought it on himself, but God was punishing him for our own life. But it was our sins that did that ripped and tore and crushed him. Our sins. He took the punishment, and that made us whole. Through his bruises, we get healed. Wow, that's powerful. So now, when your heart breaks over a great loss, intense grief will touch every aspect of your life. I'm telling you, I can usually tell. I can tell right off. I can go and start meeting with the family, and especially if I know the family personally, I can usually look, and y'all can too. You can look and you can see the ones that are really having the hardest time with things. You see the ones that just can't seem to let it go because after a while they're still having hurts and they're having setbacks. And part of the healthy grieving process, which we talked about last week, is learning how to get beyond the hurts and the setbacks. You're still going to hurt. You never get over the death. But here was the deal last week. Even though a loved one died, taken away from you, their presence is gone, your love for them is still there. So, learning how to grieve is learning the space between the loss of a loved one and you still love them. And some folks, it's like this and it never comes together and they just stay messed up all their life. There's others that you start to reconcile and start to understand. Then the gap closes. As the gap closes, and you can accept their death and still accept you still love them. And it's at that point a healing takes place. You still hurt, you still grieve, but a healing takes place. So that's the deal with that. So here we go. It'll touch every aspect of your life, your body, soul, and spirit. The effects of this intense grief will vary in degree, ranging from mild to severe, depending on where you are in the grieving process. But remember, the grieving process for a man lasts 6 months to a year and a half. For a woman, a year and a half to 3 years. That's why it's always been amazing. Before I started studying this, it was amazing how a man seemed to get over it quicker. And he was often dating and carrying on. And see, the women, a lot of times, they never got married again. Or they just carried that burden for so long. And again, it's because man is a hunter. He doesn't think emotionally like a woman does. A woman thinks from a full range of emotions. And so that's why it's so much harder on the women. Now, not saying it's not hard on a man, because when I lost my mama, it was hard. When I lost my wife, it was hard. Now, why you will not experience all the effects, or you may not experience all the effects, everyone will experience some of them. We talked about that last week. Realize that these effects are common to everyone who grieves, and they're all temporary as long as you face the pain of your loss and work through the grieving process. Now, David recounts both the bitterness of his grief and the assurance of God's presence. In Psalm 73, he says, when my heart was grieved, Psalm 73, 21 to 24, when my heart was grieved and my heart embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you, yet I was always with you. You hold me by my right hand, you guide me with your counsel, and afterwards you will take me in to glory. Let's read that a little bit in different versions here. In the Hebrew, for my heart was grieved, embittered, and in a state of ferment, and I was pricked in my heart as with the sharp pang of an adder. So foolish and stupid and brutish was I, and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You do hold my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and after receive me to honor and glory. And one more version, common English version here. And I was beleaguered and bitter, totally consumed by envy. I was totally ignorant, a dumb ox in your very presence. I'm still in your presence, but you've taken my hand. You wisely and tenderly lead me, and then you bless me. Wow. So that's some heavy stuff here. Here we go. We're going to talk about, here's how you can see people going through this, especially if you know somebody. I mean, it's one thing if you didn't know anybody, this would still be handy, because even if you didn't know them, you can see this stuff and you're going to say, you know what, it sounds like you're grieving. And a lot of times people are grieving and not even knowing they're grieving. That's the problem. If somebody's grieving and does not realize it, then they can't work through the grieving process. If they don't work through the grieving process, they will carry it for years. But once they start working through the grieving process, they will find relief. Remember, it does not mean you do not love them anymore. It does, and it's not just people losing people. You can lose a job. I see people that have lost their childhood, and they're grown now, and they're actually grieving their childhood, or they've lost a job, or lost a friendship. But especially if you've lost somebody you love, remember this: is that if you know somebody's lost something or has lost in their life, and you see this stuff start happening in their life, especially if you know the person, know this is not them, then maybe you ought to bring it to them. I've even done this and say, have you experienced loss? Have you had somebody you love close to you early in death? Or is there somebody that you really loved or find out, you know, how was your life when you were at this place of work? And then all of a sudden, you know, I talked to a guy Saturday. It's just amazing how this stuff, it's God. I talked to a guy Saturday. I was walking through Walmart, and I saw this guy. And so I was there getting dog food. He came down the dog food aisle. I said, I hadn't seen him probably in 2 or 3 years. And I looked at him, and I said, something's not right. I could look at him. I just saw his spirit about him, his countenance. And I said, this ain't good. I said, it's impossible to try. This is not good. I said, this ain't good. And he walked up to me and hugged me. And I said, how you going? How's it going? I said, okay. And I said, how's things been going? I haven't seen you in a couple of years. And he said, well, you know what? I worked at a place for 20 years. All of a sudden, it's like, I'm looking down and saying, huh? And that's what I'm seeing. And then he says, on top of that, just after I got laid off after 29 years, he says, I've got no retirement, I've got nothing, no benefits, nothing. I mean, I was just put out with nothing, 29 years. And then he goes, because I was going to say, well, don't you have any retirement or anything like that? No, nothing. And he's my age. And then he turns around and he says, and then about a month or two after I lost my job, my brother went out to the woods. Lost his daddy before he lost his job, which is something way old back. and he lost his job in just a matter of months, lost his brother, which was his family contact. And so I saw it all. I mean, you could see it. You could look at him and tell something's wrong. And after he told me that, I told him I'd be praying for him. And hopefully I get a chance to see him again. I gave him a number. I said, please call me. If you ever need me, please call me. Of course, he didn't have a cell phone. And he gave me his house number, but I wrote it in my palm pilot. And so I watched my palm pilot, watched my screen, didn't even realize it. So I said, Lord, then there's a reason. Honestly, there's a reason. Because I didn't have any paperwork. And my phone's been going crazy. Y'all, my phone, I finally got another phone that came in the mail the other day. Because my phone's been going crazy for a week or two. Yep. That's why you ain't got any Mighty Armies lately, too. It's my phone dead. His phone is gone. I would get up here and go. In the morning, I take it and I put it on the table. And I'll go. CPR. And then, and I send out Mighty Army, and then it would go. And so I would take it, and I'd have to pull the battery out. I took it, and those guys worked on it, and worked on it, and worked on it. And finally, I got a call today from iFix, and I know what they're telling me. They've got another party, and I'm sorry. I had to get another one. I couldn't keep waiting. It was just, yeah. Well, now you're going to get Mighty Army. I've got the copy in back now, but I'm going to start putting the Mighty. But you should be starting getting Mighty Armies tomorrow, but I'm having to work on it. So here we go. Here we go. Again, you can, if you know somebody, if you know them, and you know how they normally act, if you know a person that always looks like a mule eating briars, you can't really tell if they've got a problem. You know, unless they've won something, then you can tell because now they're smiling. But if you know somebody's usually full of life and now they're not, they're looking kind of vain, you know, take the initiative. Don't go up and say, well, I got a feeling you got a problem. I'm here to help. No. Like Ronald Reagan said, the most fierce words he's ever heard was, I'm from the government. I'm here to help. But if you see somebody and you know they're not looking like themselves, they're not like themselves, their countenance is different, just if you can, if you know them well enough, you can do that. Say, is everything okay? Can you see the burden on it? I saw the burden on this guy. All right, so here we go. And we used to work together. That's another reason I really knew how this guy was. Always outgoing, always outspoken, always running. You know? So here we go. Here's the effects. Remember, it said it touched your body, soul, and spirit. So here we go. Physical effects. Somebody that is grieving, I mean severely grieving, they're exhausted all the time. Think about it. I mean, even if you sleep, you're still exhausted. You can't even sleep anyway, but you're just exhausted. Secondly, headaches. You know what was so odd is when Buttons died, when Lynn and I got married, she brought Rex the big old lab, 90-pound lab. Buttons was a 20-pound Cocker Spaniel mix with lots of hops. But Buttons run the house. Buttons was the alpha, okay? And Rex was the omega. And so, all the time, you know, and it took a while before Buttons would even let Rex go in another room. And Linda would say, you're not the boss of this house, Buttons. Let Rex go in. And sometimes she'd even take Buttons and hold it so Rex would go, come on in here, Rex. It's okay. You can go in the kitchen. Well, when Buttons died, Rex just laid around. Exhaustion. He laid around, bewildered, and slept. I mean, I'm talking about for months. It wasn't like a day or two. It was months. He didn't have any spunk. He just acted like he didn't even care. And finally, after a few months, he started coming back out of it. And that was $2. Can you imagine us? You know, such an exhaustion. And if you're working with somebody, I'm going to tell you another grievous cycle that people don't realize. And you'll see this in this other part. And that is after a divorce. We don't think about it, but it's true. a lot of times, it's usually one party wants a divorce and not the other. And even if both parties want a divorce, they still wind up going through a grieving cycle. And so again, you can watch it, you can see it, exhaustion, headaches, inability to sleep, indigestion, loss of appetite, stress-induced illnesses. So, you know, this little thing comes by to pick it up. Somebody that's never been sick, all of a sudden they're sick all the time. Somebody never has a, even somebody like me, I have allergies. But somebody that doesn't normally have problems with allergies, all of a sudden they got problems with allergies and stuff like that. Again, it's because stress in their life, the stress of that loss. Now, social effects. First, antisocial behavior. What would y'all consider antisocial behavior? That's a good one. What else? You got to remember there's actually two types of antisocial behavior. Okay. Well, actually, there's three. Okay. And I'm gonna tell you what they are. There's three types of antisocial behavior. There's aggressive, passive, and there's passive aggressive. The most dangerous, hardest for me to deal with, is the passive aggressive. And it's just hard for me to deal with that one because it's almost like a sarcasm. You know, at least the passive, they're at least away and not doing a whole lot. The person that's aggressive, they'll come at you, and you'll think it's you. They're not attacking you; they're hurting, and that's how the only way they know to get it out. But then the passive aggressive person will go, you say, "What's wrong with you?" "Nothing." "Well, can I help you?" "No." "Well, I wanted to." "Well, you should have known something was wrong with me." "Oh, I should have." And that's that passive aggressive. So again, aggressive, passive, passive aggressive. Then awkwardness. Somebody that's grieving, they may wind up knocking over stuff. They may wind up wrecking their car, running over all kinds of things, kicking over stuff. You know, and you're thinking, that person, why'd they get so clumsy? Why'd they act so weird? Why'd they act so out of character? They're grieving. They might not even know it. But the heart knows it, and the mind knows it, the spirit, the psyche, all knows it. They might not. Then they have escape behaviors. This is a big one. Because you've heard somebody talk about when they get depressed, they want to go drink it away. You're not going to drink it away because drinking only adds to it. You try to get rid of drink away your problems. All you're going to do is you're taking a depressant to get rid of depression. Doesn't make sense. So, it's like having a headache and hit myself in the head with a hammer. Can't get rid of this headache. Bam, 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 bam. Man, my head's hurting so bad. Bam, 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 bam. You reckon? As you're adding to it? Now, but I'm gonna take it further. Okay? I'm going to add one to it, too. I forgot to add it. Like excessive drinking, excessive drugs. Sometimes there's people that are caught up in drugs, and you're thinking, man, I can't believe they got back into that. Why do they go back to the drugs? Why do they go back to drinking? They've been sober for so long. Why do they go back? Because they're grieving. If they can get through the grieving, they can leave the drugs behind. Again, drinking, drugs, travel. Gambling. I saw on TV the other day, I cannot believe I saw it. Law offices of you catch them, we skin them. Says, if you're taking a certain kind of drug and you develop a gambling problem, you may have a lawsuit. And I said, I can see me going to court, and the judge said, that's a gamble bringing that in. Gambling, sex. All of a sudden, somebody's going crazy. You think of, they're going after everything they can get up. You know, it's chasing the women or chasing the guys. They're going, that's not the way they act. And there's a lot of people you think they're being excessive in the drinking, drugs, gambling, and or six, like maybe a six fiend, so to speak. You're going, what is wrong with them? And you're thinking they've got some kind of something, a chemical imbalance in their mind, and what's going on is they're grieving. If you can get them to understand they're grieving, it will back. Because you work the grieving process. Again, this is something you have to discover. And once you discover, you can fix it. If I've got a broken arm, you can put a cast on my foot all day. It's not going to help me break. I may limp because my arm hurts, but putting a cast on my leg is not going to help my arm. You got to find out the problem is my arm's broken. I need a cast on it. And also, shopping. Excessive shopping. Now, we all know some people don't like to shop, some people do. Linda does not like to shop, I do. But that's what I always done in all the jobs I did. I always had to go find the best buy for the best whatever product for whatever we were doing. And so, you know, I call it marketing therapy or whatever you call it. As I don't have to buy anything. And sometimes you stop and look and go, well, see things. I start thinking, well, this will be good in church and this will be good at the house and this is projects we can do. And so I write it all down so I can come back to it if I need it. It's crazy. Yeah. Well, that could be something besides grieving, too, dude. Okay. Okay. Well, it's bad when you buy it for a special occasion. Look, you buy it for a special occasion, and you're going to carry it back in a couple of days, but you bend over and split the pants. Or you get your coat caught in the door, and you tear the arm off of it. So you can't carry it back. And I said, there is people that do that. I've got people, I have even people I know, I've heard them say, just go buy it, wear it to the prom, or wear it here, and wear it there, and then bring it back. And I said, I ain't going to do that. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy it. Yeah. So again, excessive shopping. I don't know. Do you know that you can go on the shelf in the canned goods section? I think it's Green Giant or Del Monte. They is in a pack of two. The corn cobs. Pack of two in a sealed plastic bag. And it says vacuum sealed. And you can take it home and take it out of the bag and microwave it for a minute. That's cool. Right. So I love the thought of it. I love pulling the car. All right. So here we go. Here's another one. Excessive busyness. I've had people grieving and I can't calm them down and stop them long enough to do it. They even talk with them to do it. They just doing everything they can do. I mean, every time you talk to them, they're on the road, doing this or doing that. And busyness does not, busy does not equal productive. Busyness and productivity can be two entirely different things. Matter of fact, busyness can be the counterpart of productivity. You can do a little bit and be productive. You can do a whole bunch and do nothing. But that's part of, when you see people, see, I don't know if you ever thought about it, when you start seeing these things right here, you need to start thinking, especially if they don't normally act this way. And if you can trace it back and say they've had a loss, you can find out, you know what, they're grieving. That's why, especially if you hear someone say, I don't know why in the world they're acting that way. They never acted that way. And look at them now. If you can get them some help, just plain out withdrawal. You just can't find them anymore. Then there's the emotional mental effects. Depression. Dreams about the deceased, dreams about the marriage, dreams about the job. You know, you always have these dreams going on, and you wake up and think you're back somewhere, or wake up and think you're back at work. I had a dream the other night that I was back at Procter & Gamble. I haven't worked there in, 25, 30 years. I had a dream I was back at Procter & Gamble, up 30 foot in the air working. It was some kind of electrical work up to 30 foot in there, and I woke up and I was tired. And I said, man, I hope I got it all finished. And I woke up, I was thinking, it was like I was just there. And Okay, so depression, anxiety. What's the difference in depression and anxiety? although it can be the same. Yeah, you're. Yeah, your heart's going. When you, here's depression. Yeah, there you go. Depression's kind of, and both of them can happen to you at the same time. You're feeling kind of down. You're feeling kind of out. And all of a sudden, something hits you. A thought hits you about what's going on. And then you have this anxious thought. And then that can actually lead to a stress attack. Okay, you're thinking you're having a heart attack, and it's nothing but anxiety. It's an anxiety attack. Because it has the same, it constricts the same muscles that you may have and make it feel like you're having a heart attack. Forgetfulness and disorganization. It also comes with age. Forgetfulness, maybe not disorganization. Guilt and anger. Guilt and anger. You know, my mom's been dead since 87. Every now and then, because of one day, before she was still living, and she'd get me in there. She'd be in the living room because she had a hospital bed in the living room. And she'd say, my nickname was Cricket. Cricket! Come in here and talk to me. What she wanted to do was let her remember my house. She just let him remember my house, tell stories and stuff. And she'd just laugh. And the sillier it got, the better she liked. And one day I was really, really tired. I'd been up for days helping somebody. I come into the house and she said, and I was talking to her, and all of a sudden, I just kind of fell out on the couch asleep. I heard her say, talk to me, Cricket. And so I talked a little bit. And she goes, you ain't talking. And I talked a little bit. And it seemed like whenever I talked to her, it always cheered her up. And she had a better day. Well, this day, I really didn't do a whole lot of talking. I did more sleeping when I was there at the house. And do you know, even to this day, she died in 87. And this happened in 86. That one time, it's still, I hear it. Sometimes I wake up here, talk to me, Cricket. And I'm thinking, you know what? I sure wish I would have took a nap for it. See, Mom, I wish I could talk. You know what? And I talked to her plenty of times before and plenty of times after. And then, and so I get angry at myself. And then there's time, Mama, for the last 2 years she lived, if she could. My mom was an excellent cook. The last 2 years she lived, when she worked in the hospital, if she cooked for you, it was that old red sausage split in the frying pan. She would burn it. And she got some old cheap macaroni and cheese. It would be stuck all together. You pull it out in clumps. And canned biscuits that the dogs would. I mean, you could carry them out using for skeet shoes. And you know what? When I was eating it, I'd eat it and smile. Yes, Mama, I'd smile. And I'd say, it's good, Mama. It's good. She says, is it good, Cricket? And I'm thinking, not like your fried chicken or your collards and pigtails or like your cornbread and all this stuff. Stuff like that, Mama, but it's okay because you took your time to cook it. Yes, Mama, it's great. And I go out and go, ugh, it's hard to, I'm not even sure it's digested. Yeah, but you know what, though? I love red sausage. I love sausage. It's one of my favorites. My top. My mama would burn it to where you hear it crunch when you were eating it. Yeah, I mean, you hear the biscuit crunch, you hear the macaroni and cheese crunch, and you would hear the sausage crunch. I even thought one time I'd bit the fork. But you know what? I have said, I don't know how many times, I would give everything I could think of just one more time. Sit down with Mom and hear her speak to me, Cricket, talk to me, Cricket, and give me some of that hard sausage, biscuits, and macaroni and cheese. It's not going to happen. When I get to heaven and say, Mary suffered the lamb, and we're sitting down there, because I've said it so many times, I'm pretty sure my first dish is going to be that hard sausage and that nasty macaroni and cheese and those hard biscuits. But it must be glorified there. My teeth will be glorified too. I had Bethany with me the other night, and I was on the way to her grandmama's, and so we stopped and get. She wanted some different clothes, and instead of going back home, I said, I'll stop at Walmart because you're going to need this anyway. It's just a shirt and a pair of pants you're going to need for Dove's Nest anyway. And so I said, well, they got Didn't you say that the deli, when they get ready to close, they sell all their stuff half price anyway? Those are bigger than McDonald's. She said, sure, Dad, I like that stuff in the deli. So we'll get us some. And by the time we got there, it was all closed down, and they had these bags sitting up. And there were shrimp, and there was chicken strips, and there was fries. And I said, well, I'll get the chicken strips, and then I'll try some of them, or I'll try some of the shrimp, because they were all, one was a couple of dollars for all of them. And I got in the car, I knew what was a couple of dollars for all of them. I honestly had to pray. When we prayed, here's what I prayed. I took the first bite and realized I hadn't said grace. I said, stop, Beth. And I said, Lord, I thank you for this food, and I thank you for the stomach that I just had. And I thank you, God, that you're going to make my teeth strong enough to bite. It was crunch, crunch. I had to break off pieces. It was like, whoa. And so when I got home, the shrimp was left. And Linda said, you want that? I said, not really. She said, I'll try it. So she's over going. Okay, so that shrimp wound up going, the dogs got it. Yeah. Okay. So loneliness and withdrawal. They can be in a room full of people and still be lonely. Have you ever felt that way? In a room full of people that love you, and you still feel like you're all that. You might be grieving. You start to feel that. Or if you're a person that normally engages with other people, you know, my wife can tell me, she goes, okay, what's wrong? What, you feeling bad or what? She said, you just come in here to all these people, and you're a social butterfly. And your butterfly's going in the cocoon. I'm going, I'm not feeling good in my stomach. I'm going to get a or something. She said, I know there's something wrong because you ain't talking. And I go, well, I'll get better. So give me a hammer. So I get myself in the head and get rid of it. All right. Threats of self-destruction. Suicide. Now, let me just tell you something. We talked about this before. If somebody threatens suicide, if it's once or twice, they just say something like, you know what? This place would be better off without me. I'd feel better if I weren't here. Remember, they just want the pain to stop. Sometimes, many times, people don't really want to kill themselves. They want the pain to stop. But if somebody has talked about this many, 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 many times, you better take them for real. And if they've tried it more than once. Because maybe they took pills to get your attention. But the next time, they may take a gun. And they didn't get me a gun. You can't always see it. You don't always see it. What? And lady, a friend of a friend, went outside. He said, this was not. And she said, but well, we never saw any signs. She says, can you help me try to figure this out? And so I went through the signs about giving stuff away to the right people. Different things about, you know, losing interest and stuff and getting alone and even searching ways to do it. And she went, you know what? Everything I gave her, she said, then I kind of felt bad because then now they really feel a little upset because the signs were there and they didn't know. And as a matter of fact, yesterday he gave one of his last things away to one of his people. So if you don't know, you don't know. But that's why it's good that we are teaching stuff like this everywhere. Every church should be teaching stuff like this. Every organization that's to help people should be teaching stuff and having something to look at, because in this day and time, suicide is rampant. And also, in this day and time, there's a lot of people grieving, and we don't understand this grief, and so we think they've lost it. We think that their Jesus fell off the crack, and it happened. They're grieving, and if we'd understand that, again, we could put the cast on their leg because they're limping, and put the cast on the arm and throat. So. He was grieving. He was definitely grieving too. If he never married, that was his significant. And I don't mean this in a crazy way. I mean this in a just wholesome way. It was his significant other. Okay, not his wife. None of that weird. I'm saying it was his significant other. Right. So he lost. That's right. That's right. Okay. Spiritual effects. Angry. Anger. And then people get angry at God, and then say, "I say, and I'll ask them, said, are you angry at God?" And they go, "Oh no." And I'll go, "You know what? Number one, He's a big God; He can handle it. Number two, He already knows. Are you angry at Him? When you put it that way, yes. Why did He fix it? Why did He do something about it?" Yeah, it's really kind of weird, but not weird. It's how God works. Let me change that. There was a situation I was working through just a couple nights ago with all this going on with my mother-in-law, and we're trying to get everything straight and get it moving. And I got, before I got in the car, I said, "Can you just take it away, God? Can you just get rid of it? Can you just, you know, is there something else you can do? Make it different? Something." And I turned on the radio to a preacher. Immediately, the preacher said, "Well, why are you asking God to take the car?" Okay, that was the first thing out of that preacher's mouth. And I said, so I turned it up. And he said, "Don't you know at the end of this thing, you're going to, look," he didn't say these words, "but you're going to be better than new. Because God's purifying you and working the process in you. Gold's coming." So again, you know, God's got you. You're angry at God. Doubting, and when Beverly died, I saw this in a lot of people. I saw this in the in-laws, and I saw this in some of my kids. And saw this in some other people that were very close to Beverly. Doubting the love, fairness, and the faithfulness of God. If God loved her so much, why would He doubt? He was doing good. Why would He let this happen? And I said, the Lord knows what's going on. You're not going to outthink Him. You definitely can't think ahead of Him. You know? And I even had somebody get mad at me and said, get mad at me because I wasn't angry. And I said, why should I be angry at God? He knew what was going on. He started preparing me for the 6 months before she died. God was working. He was at work. Okay. Then fear of God and dread about the future. Now you're going to the other extreme. Instead of doubting it, now you're pulling it to you. Fear of God, you dread about the future. You're afraid of God. You're afraid that God's going to zap you. And you're afraid of what's coming in the future. Then an inability to pray or read the Bible. Withdrawal from spiritual activities. You know, I've seen people over the years who quit coming to church. And then they'll tell me something like, well, every time I come to church, I see my mom. I see my daddy. Or my husband. Or my wife. And I just can't tell them. And I tell them, if you want to get over this grief, you need to come. But you've got to face it. If you don't face it, then it can't be healed. You've got to face it. And see, it's like, Wayne, that was the most awesome story about that little baby. About what the Shriners got a hold of, what happened. And it was amazing in just a little while what they done instead of waiting for her. Because I remember when I was a little boy, I saw a woman. I was with my grandmama, and I went to somebody's house. I think it was on 2nd Street, way old back in the day. And this woman was an older woman in a wheelchair. Her feet like this. Because she would probably, she'd be 100 years old if she had lived. But I couldn't fathom my feet being there. And I've had friends that had to sleep in the board with their feet like that. But if nobody would have treated her, that baby, she would grow up and never be affected. She'd be affected in other ways, but she could not reach her full potential because she was deformed. That's why a lot of this cancer stuff, these drugs, is dollar signs. A lot of times you go in just for a consultation. Okay. Doctor to dentist. You go to dentist, you get a consultation, then come back. I'm actually hurting right now. You know. Yeah. Okay, so you got inability to pray and read the Bible, withdraw from spiritual activities. And then there's questions about why God allowed this. Why? I've grown to believe this. Sometimes we see kids die young. We see people die young, so people die. But you know what? If my young'un was going to wind up a year or two later, like Hezekiah was told he was going to die. And God said, he turned his face to the wall and he prayed. And this is cool. It's an awesome message about taking everything out of your way when you're praying. Just frustrated with God. And God added 15 years to his life. But the problem was, if he'd have died when God said he was going to die, he would have died the most successful king. But when he died broke because he was successful. Because he went and showed people what he had. He showed, you know, the Queen of Sheba and all this stuff going around everybody. And he won't lose there. And so, again, what if God allowed the person to die this year and actually saved them from something a whole lot worse? It's like that little girl I keep seeing, and every time I find myself wrestling about something, I run into her almost immediately. You know, that little girl with no hands, and she's in a wheelchair, and she's got her body's all spotted up, and I see her trying to shop, and she got a little headpiece on, and I'm thinking, and I'm complaining, God, please take me to the woodshed, I'll pick my own stick. You know, yes you can. I mean, why did Bear do? Why did Bear die at 38? After all that struggle to go through college at a later age of life, and only been doing it for 5-6 years, you know, why did all this happen? You know, you see somebody, there was a young man that he had some kind of disease, but he was one leg was shorter than the other, he was a little bitty thing. although he was a grown man, he was smaller than James Allen. But he's like this, and he had like a big old chest, and his legs were a little bit longer than the other. But that boy could sing. He go up to camp meet, he would sing, and the place would go ballistic. He sounded, I mean, it was amazing, his singing. And one night he got sick, and it was over. But you know what? It could have been mercy. Because what if he would have gotten some bad, you know? I hear people, I've been told this, I can't tell you how many times I've been told that somebody's going through something, and they say, I wish I hadn't died. I'll tell you this, now when Daniel was sick, on his first birthday, when they said he had sent some verses, he wouldn't need to be 17, and they were teaching Barry how to beat his back, and I was praying one night in the house, and I said, Lord, I will gladly take his place. The Lord spoke back to me as clear as a bell and said, you can't, but my son did. He was healed. Like I said, the doctors have told us over the years, when he was 12, when he was, you know, whatever. Now we think the sister I brought, no, it's not. I went here. A 30-year-old, no. No. And what gets, and I think about this too, Daniel, they told him he had a broken back, and it looked like he had a severed spinal cord. And I told that story when he got in that wreck. But it's amazing that 6 months later, he's jumping out of a helicopter in Afghanistan. You know, God's awesome. So, why is life given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For sighing comes to me instead of food, my groans pour out like water, when what I feared has come upon me, what I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness, I have no rest, but only turmoil. That's a powerful thing. That's after he's lost everything. Here's the Hebrew. I'm gonna go up to verse 21. Who long await for death, but it comes not, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures. Who rejoice exceedingly and are elated when they find the grave. Why is the light of day given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? When my sighing comes before my food, and my groanings pour out like water. For the thing which I greatly fear comes upon me, and that of which I am afraid befalls me. I was not, and am not at ease, nor have I had, or have I rest, nor was I, or am I quiet. Yet trouble came, and still comes upon me. And I just want to read this other version here, just can't waste sometimes this version. Instead of bread, or what's the point of life when it doesn't make sense? When God blocks all the roads to me. Instead of bread, I get groans from my supper, then leave the table and vomit on the couch. The worst of my fears has come true. What I've dreaded most has happened. My response is shattered. My peace is destroyed. No rest for me, ever. Death has invaded me. Eliphaz speaks out now. You're the one. Job, the two greatest people to suffer, and I know in the Bible, would be Job and Jesus. And, of course, both of them were greatly blessed on the other end. And Job got back double everything except for his 10 children. He only got 10 more. But he got back everything else double. So, and you've heard me preach it too. Why did he only get 10 children but double everything else? He got the same amount of children that he lost, but he got double everything else. And the reason is everything else didn't have souls. But his children had souls. So when he got to heaven, he had 20 children. That's right. He was double. That's right. So everything else was double temporarily, but his children were doubled permanently. Any questions, any thoughts, any, is it, I mean, is it, y'all about through? Have y'all had enough grief, and y'all want to go a little bit deeper in the grieving process? We can take her down. We can drop it down a little bit deeper. It's up to y'all. If y'all are tired of grief and you want to go to something less painful, we will. But at the same time, I really believe that this is doing a lot of help for us, and it's going to be a lot of help for us. And if you weren't able to get some of these things, they're right there, especially last week. Last week was just something. But if you're ready to go to something else, we'll be able to. If you bear with me, we'll take it. I know it'll be painful, but I'll take it down deep. I'll drop the plow down a little bit further. So, right now? Okay, we'll go back in a little bit more. Y'all tell me, because I don't want to. I don't want to aggravate you with it, but I want you to be able to, because I'm going to tell you what it does. It doesn't just help you help somebody else, it helps you help them. Okay, you start throwing those paper airplanes at me. Okay. Yeah, I know. So if I come in next week and a paper airplane comes over my head, I'll say, okay, that's enough. But you know what? I honestly have discovered, and it's phenomenal, is that a lot of people, their pain, they don't realize is because they're grieving. And they don't even realize it. Or some of their behaviors that seem out of the norm is because they're grieving. And if they can correctly get through the grieving process, maybe we might do two more weeks of it. And go ahead and dig down another inch or two in the soil. But it's actually... You actually could dig, but so is any more comments or thoughts? Yeah, definitely. I get blown away. The more I study this stuff, the more it blows me away. And I'll go back and say, wow, I wish I knew this 20 years ago. But then the Lord speaks to him and says, you weren't ready for it. So I said, okay, thank you, Lord. Yeah, we're ready for it. So when I first started studying the grieving cycle, it was in my second pastorate. And I was in Bath. And I had a lady whose husband was, they were both 78. He had died. And so she was bad off. She was starting to be sick. She had never been sick. She was starting to be sick. She was starting to do a lot of daydreaming. She'd be to church, but she wasn't there. And it was like when I was taking that first counseling course, everything that I would go through reading in that course that week, we would go through it. I'd see it. You know? And so she, about 16 months, maybe 2 years, she started dating a guy. And then they got married, and I did the wedding. He was 81, and she was 79. I do remember this. I asked him, when we were sitting down with the family, we were doing the wedding plans. I was trying to be funny. I looked over and said, you got to tell me one thing. And somebody said, you don't have it. It was funny. They loved it. Uh-oh.